That Ken Freeland facilitating the 9/11 truth telling for April 30th, 2014. Craig, you want to call the roll?
Yeah, sure. I think there's maybe one person that I didn't know from before, because when I came back on, it said there were four. So I have Barry Zwicker, Dwayne Dietz, Rich O'Coyne, Ken Freeland, Craig McKee, and I think there's one more. Is that right?
Ned Delaney.
Oh, Ned Delaney. Okay, great.
Okay, and so our first item on the agenda, as always, is to approve the minutes of the previous meeting as circulated this time by me. Any objections to approving those minutes with the correction of the affiliation for Dwayne Dietz, which I got wrong in the draft. Other than that, any amendments to the minutes?
Well, just so other people know, the affiliation should be San Diego 9/11 Truth.
For Dwayne. San Diego. Okay, I thought SD was South Dakota. But I just put SD anyway, so it'll work, okay. I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we got that part straightened out. And any other amendments? Hearing none, then we'll take those minutes for approved and then move on to tonight's agenda. We had only one basic item on the agenda in the draft tonight, and that was Rich O'Coyne's presentation and the discussion pursuant to that. But I think Barry has another thing he'd like to add to the agenda, right, Barry?
That's right, yeah.
And you want to just say what that is so that everyone knows?
Sure. It has to do with the impending opening of the what do you call it, the 9/11, the National September 11 Memorial and Museum at the World Trade Center. And what I'd like to introduce is a couple of websites where you can get plugged into a growing controversy about a 7-minute video that will be
okay.
Part of that. And
okay.
I could go on, but that's
no that's okay. We'll get to it when we get to it. Does anybody have any objection to adding that to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, then that will be our second item on the agenda. Any other amendments or requests for the agenda, deletions or additions? Okay, hearing
well,
none, then we'll work.
Sorry, it's me again, Ken. While we were waiting for you, we had a little conversation about the world premiere of a documentary that I just came back an hour ago from seeing at the Hot Docs Festival here in Toronto, mm-hmm. called Secret Trial 5. And it's very, very much related to 9/11 truth and to the whole war on terror. And I would like to, in super briefly, just tack that on, if I could, to
sure.
to give a website.
Okay. Then any objections to making that our third item on the agenda? Okay. Hearing none, then that we'll take that up third. Okay. So let's move into the first item. The first item is Rich O'Coyne. He's going to basically elaborate from what he started us out on last month, when tangential to the presentation on the movie, the film, what was it called, Unthinkable. Where this issue was definitely addressed. He talked about a congressional bill that may present the opportunity to reveal to the public some redacted or excised pages from an earlier document. So, Rich, do you want to go ahead and give us a full detailed description of that? And about the effort to get that bill passed and why you think it's important to the 9/11 truth movement, and then we'll take it up as a discussion, okay?
Sure. Thanks, Ken. Yeah.
Thank you, Rick.
I don't know how many Americans and U.S. citizens are on this call, but you might not be following our congressional happenings as well as I am. But anyway, there's a House bill down here, 428, House Resolution, H.R. 428, which asks the president to please release. They weren't redacted from a congressional report about 9/11, but they were excised completely. So Congressman Lynch, Steve Lynch from Massachusetts, and Congressman Jones, I forget his first name, from one of the Carolinas, Walter Jones, I forget. Anyway, they did co-sponsor this bill, and they've been really trying to get other Congress members to co-sign as well, co-sponsor as well. They did get a few more. I think they're up to 8 now or something like that. But it's really a tough slog. And I found here in Massachusetts, in the Boston area 9/11 truth movement, a lot of reticence about dealing with it, because the 28 pages, from what we're being told, they're classified, but people have talked about them, from what we're being told, they reveal the Saudi government connection to 9/11. So, that said, you'll talk to some people in the truth movement who don't want anything to do with it because they think that's just as trading one fake towelhead, quote-unquote, villain for another towelhead, and it's taking responsibility off the U.S. government. It's kind of like they think of a red herring that's being tossed our way, and it's a trap of sorts. And so, I mean, I'm summing up what I've heard from various people, why they're not trying to get these 28 pages released. There are 9/11 families that are working for it. And I think it's reasonable to conclude that the Saudi government was involved, because we know about the passports that were rubber stamped over there, right? There's no dispute about that. That's where the 9/11 quote-unquote hijackers were processed. It was through Saudi Arabia. Is anyone unaware of that?
You'll let you
well, yeah, this is Duane. I would just say that I think the objection by truth movement people are that that just may, that those passports and that whole line of, we'll call it evidence, is a red herring in itself. It's leading to something that maybe didn't happen, or maybe it was set up to be found later if problems
right.
arose.
Okay, so now just to complete my thought here, I had the same feelings when I first heard about these 28 pages until I remembered P-TECH. Now, I don't know if anybody on this call needs any background on P-TECH. I'm assuming most 9/11 truthers are aware of the situation.
Well, why don't you just summarize it for the benefit of those who might
well,
be tuning in later.
P-TECH, yeah. P-TECH was a small software company in Quincy, Massachusetts, so very near where we are here. And Indira Singh, she was a risk assessment professional working for J.P. Morgan Chase at the time, and she was looking for, after 9/11, they were trying to beef up their security systems and whatnot. And so she was looking for some sophisticated software, and she was told, well, why not P-TECH? P-TECH, you know, they got the best software, the magic P-TECH software. So she noticed that they had all these clients from the federal government. The client roster was incredible. It was a who's who of the federal government, the CIA, the FBI, Customs, the White House, even NATO. So they had all this, the FAA, by the way, also. So they had all of this under-the-hood access, and I believe played a part in the confusion that day. It wasn't just the drills. They needed software to make sure the drills would do their job in confusing everyone. Hence the radar blips that didn't make any sense, and it's just all everything going haywire. It was this magic software is what Indira Singh strongly suspects, and what Joe Bergantino is a local investigative reporter here that Indira Singh approached because she wasn't getting anywhere with the FBI. She was trying to tell them what she knew, and they wouldn't listen to her. They said, there's nothing we can do. And so she turned to Joe Bergantino, and he commissioned a four-month investigation in Washington, D.C., and confirmed everything that she had told him, and also said that it was worse than even she knew. And just as he was about to file his report on TV News, local channel 4, CBS affiliate, The White House quashed the story, told them not to report it because it was going to affect national security. So I think that because PTEC, sorry, the most important part, was a Saudi-owned company, I think it's important that we do get to the bottom of anything Saudi. Because as Indira Singh said, PTEC is the one golden thread you pull and everything is unraveled about 9/11. I think she's right.
Okay. Thanks for the introduction. Rich, who would like to be on the stack to make a comment or ask a question besides me? Who would like to go first? Anybody have a question or comment relating to this issue?
Well, this is Dwayne, I would have a comment.
Yeah, Dwayne, and then, okay, I'll go after you. Go ahead, Dwayne.
Well, I guess my comment is I think we should pursue whatever evidence might be out there. And I'm all for pressing for what we can come up with and then sort out later whether we think it's leading somewhere that's important or whether it's a distraction. But I think it's important to get it out. So I'm in favor of supporting this.
Are you in the U.S. or Canada?
I'm in the U.S.
And what state?
California.
Okay, so your senators are Feinstein and who?
Boxer.
Okay, so there's nothing in the Senate. This is a House bill, but...
Well, I do have my local congressman is a powerful congressman that may play a role here, and that's ISA, who heads up the government, internal government committee. I'm not sure of the exact title, but they're to investigate things that are going wrong inside the government.
It sounds creepy. I'm sure he's going to get to the bottom of everything, though, and let us know.
Oh, no, he's going to find a way to avoid it. He has the power to pursue it, but I don't think he will. Daryl Issa.
Well, all I can say is if you know anybody else, let them know that this House Resolution Bill 428 is out there and its sponsors are still looking for help. And it would be nice to see what's in those 28 pages. I got to admit, I'd like to see it. So I'm trying to do that here in Massachusetts. I happen to move from one district to another, so I got to pester two Congress critters for the price of one. And I'm trying to get other people to. And I think other people, we have 11 Congress members in our delegation, or 10 or something like that now. And I just tried to get as many people to call their congressmen as I could. So. Please spread the word if you agree.
Okay. I'd like to ask you, Rich, how do you know that the revelations that would come out of these excised or redacted pages would contain reference to PTEC? How do we know that for a fact?
Well, no, we don't know that. In fact, they probably don't reference PTEC, although they might. That's one of the things I'd like to find out. But in any event, I think it argues for pursuing the Saudi angle. Don't leave that angle dangling when PTEC, we know, is part of it. Even if it's not discussed in those 28 pages, we can be the ones to bring it up.
If they actually reveal it, then at that point, you think they would be susceptible to pursuing the PTEC? Connection?
It could be a Pandora's box. It could be something that just starts something much bigger. We don't know until we actually see what's in there. I mean, according to the people who've read the 28 pages, the few congressmen who've gone down and actually read it, they've been blown away by it. They were completely shocked by what they saw. And that's why they're adamantly, you know, really encouraging, urging their fellow congressmen to and women to go ahead and read it too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who else would like to make a comment or ask a question?
Craig.
Craig, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I have two questions, actually. I'm kind of curious. First of all, I just heard about this 28 pages of redacted material in the last few months. I didn't know about it before then. So I'm curious to know whether you know, Rich, whether this has been known for a long time that these pages were censored, or is this just something that came to light recently? And my second question deals with how do we know about the potential connection of the PTEC software to 9/11? Like, is it just kind of a theory that maybe the software was used to help with the confusion, or do we have something more than that?
Well, like I said, the investigation that was going to blow that wide open was quashed by the Bush-Cheney White House.
Okay.
I've written a story about that, and I've actually talked to the guy, the investigative reporter, several times, trying to get him to step up here, because I know, you know, he knows a lot about the Saudi connection, and why isn't he all over this? I think he took, you know, he used to work at the news station. They took a cushy job at BU, where he is the director of investigative reporting or something like that. And so he's just kind of, he's not piping up anymore. He went silent on me when he saw I was digging. He stopped responding to my emails. He knew I was going to make his life uncomfortable. I think he made a deal with the devil, I hate to say it. But I'm not going to judge the man. He has a family. He might have received threats. But anyway, if you really want the nitty-gritty on it, just Google the 2004 9/11 omission hearings, and Indira Singh presents there, and it's about a half an hour long. She talks about her experience with Joe Bergantino, and she talks about the whole thing and how the software was involved in 9/11.
Oh.
So if you haven't seen that, it's Indira Singh, 2004 9/11 omission hearings. Just Google
okay.
that and it'll come right up.
Okay.
She talks about, she reads a message from Sibel Edmonds, and then she goes into her own speech.
Right. And the 28 pages, how long have we known about that?
That's a good question. I'm really not sure. I mean, obviously, it's been classified since the Congressional Report is very old now, before the 9/11 Commission Report, I believe. So it's been classified all that time. Why all of a sudden it's come to light? I think it might have been part of a batch of other stuff that was marked for possible declassification. And so it's just like up to the president now. And so that's why this resolution asks the president to please allow it. So it sounds
right.
like something that recently came under the purview of the president, whether or not it should be declassified.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Maybe you could send Craig or me that link to your story.
Sure.
That you wrote, and then we can include that in the minutes for people's reference, okay?
Sure. I'll send it to you, Ken, and you can forward it. I don't have everyone's email addresses, so
you can
forward
it. I'll send it. Thank you, Craig. No problem.
Did someone join the call just in the last couple minutes?
No, that was me, Craig. I put my earphone on, I dropped off and came back on. Does anybody else have a question or comment on this issue? Hello?
Yeah, somebody new just came on?
Oh, Craig, hi. Did we just lose some people?
Sue Serpa's here.
Hi, sir. Hi, Sue. Welcome back.
Hi, Ken.
All right. Well,
I am late.
This is a problem. We're just talking with Craig about the issue of PTEC and Saudi Arabia and so forth, and he's given us a rundown on the congressional bill that's trying to get those 28 pages back into the public domain.
Great.
So, would you like to make a comment or ask a question, Sue?
Well, I think it's very interesting that Walter B. Jones is one of the co-sponsors. I've always been fascinated with his progress in pursuing truth. He was the same congressman who coined the phrase "freedom fries," so he had been basically a neocon, and then he learned that the invasion of Iraq was based on lies. And while I was there with about 100 coordinated effort in, I believe it was July 2007, when John Conyers had the impeachment hearing that wasn't an impeachment hearing in the imperial presidency. He was actually one of those who testified. He'd gotten his hands on Vincent Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. He's been edging closer and closer toward truth ever since. So it's kind of interesting that he's a co-sponsor of H-428. I also wanted to make the comment, I know a lot of people are skeptical of the possible Saudi angle of the financing, that this is going to take the possibly take the heat off of those who believe it was an inside job or a Mossad operation. But I don't think that's necessarily so, because there are some common goals between the State of Israel and the Saudi royals, especially when it comes to Iran. So it's not so far-fetched, and certainly PTEC would be a link to help guide this into a broader investigation.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on this issue? Well, hearing none, I'd like to thank Rich for bringing this issue to our attention, and we'll be sure to link to his piece on the question in a minute so people can look at that for their reference and consider the argument further. Maybe also, Rich, you might want to just maybe write like a couple of sentences about what you would like people to do with respect to their local congressman to help promote the bill. Okay, and we'll include that in the minutes as well. There's no objection. Okay. All right. So that issue, and then we'll move on to Barry's first issue, which is the what was it again, Barry? The first one.
I have two alerts, if you will. One from north of the Canada-U.S. border, and one from south of the border. And so I'll start here in Kanuckistan, and what I want to do is draw the attention of all of you to a new crowdsourced documentary entitled Secret Trial 5. And I just returned an hour and a half ago from seeing the world premiere of this, and I'm very inspired by it. I feel confident that any genuine truther who gets to see it, and it's not available yet, I'll come to that, will find it very deserving of, for instance, financial support. So this documentary was 3.5 years in the making, and concerns, which I have to put into just less than a nutshell, a really bad law in Canada that enables something called a security certificate to be issued against anybody who's not a Canadian citizen but's living here, and it enables them to be imprisoned indefinitely with no charges being laid. And this is exactly what's happened to five people, and as you can imagine, these five people all have brown skins and some of them have beards, and they're all Muslim. And the documentary just points out how, and they all have sought a trial, but all the evidence that's caused them to be issued this certificate by our spy agency, CSIS, is withheld, completely withheld. They can't, their lawyers cannot see any of the evidence that's causing them to be imprisoned. So that's it in a nutshell. It actually makes Guantanamo Bay look kind of reasonable. And so if you want to see a 2.5-minute trailer of it that lays out this lack of due process under the security certificate, then you can go to Secret Trial, four words, The Secret Trial 5, numeral 5, The Secret Trial 5. And you can then see who's produced the film and so on. They're really great people. So another potential wrongdoing also has to do with film or video. And this came to my attention just a few 3 days ago, I guess, that the National September 11 Memorial and Museum at the World Trade Center is going to open, what is it, Craig, May the 20th or something?
Yeah, 21st.
Yeah, May 21, this thing opens. Now, part of the offering will be a 7-minute video. And a number of people have seen the video because they were asked to consult with the museum people about it. And this video, to put it in a nutshell again, there's a total conflation of all Muslims with Al-Qaeda, and then a total conflation of Al-Qaeda with all extreme violent terrorism, and specifically 9/11. And the film even uses, instead of the voiceover of Brian Williams, who otherwise does the voiceover, they use someone with broken English in a Middle Eastern accent. It's really a wet dream of your psychological warfare people who want to promote the idea that Islam is the worst evil in the world and visited 9/11 upon the United States of America. But of course it has ramifications around the world because it's part of the fraud of the so-called war on terror. So one place you can find out more about it is if you type in 9/11 Museum and then CNN Faith Leaders. I found that's the best word combination. 9/11 Museum, CNN, Faith Leaders. There's about a 5 or 6 minute news piece that was done with two of the faith leaders who are critical of this. There's no chance that it'll become, you know, a 9/11 truth video. That is completely out of the question. But the worst excesses of it might be amenable to a re-edit. So far, the people are adamantly refusing to re-edit. And the final thing I'll say is that the shame of it is that it's the American, it's called the American Coalition of Arab and Muslim American Organizations, actually, are urging that this film be edited again. It's called The Rise of Al-Qaeda. And so the ADC is the American... I'm looking for what actually ADC is. It's the American...
Anti-Discrimination Committee, I think, something like that.
That's it. I hate these abbreviations when you can't be sure. And so I can send along to Ken the email address where you can see a brief rundown of this, what's being done. And there are earls within it. And the shame is that it's just Arab and Muslim groups that are calling on the museum to edit this thing. And it would surely be better if there was more widespread criticism, if you will, of this video before it's actually open to the public.
Do you have the address to whom people should send their complaints?
Well, what I would suggest is to go to www.adc.org.
Okay.
I think that's just the portal that will put you in touch with all of this. That's where I went.
Okay.
And as you say, it's the American-Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. No wonder I couldn't remember it. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and can you also send us the link on that first issue that you discussed for reference?
Should I just send it to you, Ken, and then you can redistribute?
Yeah, I'll forward it to Craig. Can you, can you tell us if there's any group in Canada that's come out in opposition to this business?
Well, the Canadian Arab Federation, the CAF, almost certainly will. I haven't had a chance since I found out about this to call a friend of mine and a colleague, James Kafia, who is a 9/11 truther himself and the past president of the Canadian Arab Federation. And I wouldn't be surprised if CAF will have something to say about it, but because it does stretch across the border. But this is mainly an American
I beg your pardon. I was speaking about the first issue you talked about. I should have made it clear. The whole certificate of security or whatever it's called, that strikes me as being sort of unconstitutional, even according to the Canadian Constitution, I should think. And I'm wondering if there isn't a group in Canada that's legally protesting.
Oh, well, on the first one, yes. Well, what's happened, as a matter of fact, is that lawyers for some of the five who came on, who this was visited upon, fought it in the courts, went right up to the Supreme Court of Canada. The Supreme Court of Canada unanimously declared the law under which the security certificate process takes place to be unconstitutional. But the problem is they gave the government of Canada 1 year to come up with a replacement legislation that would not be unconstitutional. Well, the government of Canada deliberately cooled its heels for almost the full year and about 2 weeks before it was due to do something. It came out with another law called Bill C-3, which is just only slightly better. And there were committee hearings, and James Caffey, I noticed he was one of those who testified before the Commons Committee. So the Canadian Arab Federation is very much involved with that, but also, of course, a lot of civil rights lawyers here and the Canadian Civil Liberties Association.
Right.
Yeah, so here in Canada, but there hasn't been enough of a public outcry because, people, they've all got Arab names and they're all Muslims and they all have dark skin and people think where there's smoke, there's fire. And the government's been able to get away with this completely, well, proven unconstitutional activity. But it's not over because now Bill C-3 has enabled the Mounties and CSIS to go ahead. And now the lawyers are going to take that all through the courts again, and they're confident that it will be declared unconstitutional. And then God knows what will happen after that. They're just playing a long game. The government is just keeping this alive as long as they can.
Sounds eerily familiar.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it?
Been there, done that kind of thing, would anybody like to comment or ask a question on these issues, either of these issues?
Well, I just wondered, Barry, whether the 7-minute video, I'm assuming that that's not something that can be found online. I'm assuming it's just we can only go on what, the feedback from people who have actually seen it.
I believe so. Like I'm just looking at the email that I received from a friend who's a church person here and has been very much involved with civil rights and so on. And so there are various Earls in it, but there is not an Earl for the actual video itself because it still hasn't been released.
Right.
But there are people who have seen it because they were called in to consult, and some of them were from Arab and Muslim. Some of them were American Arabs or American Muslims, and at least one of them resigned in protest because it's so bad and that they wouldn't change it, and that's where it stands. So if again a public outcry or not an outcry, but anyway, public input could possibly get them to ameliorate the worst of this unseen video, but we know bits and pieces of it, and it absolutely says that Al-Qaeda did 9/11, and it conflates Muslims with Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda with terrorism. And that apparently everyone who has seen it says that's what it does. And this CNN interview, the people interviewed on it, they're very responsible and civil, and they point out the problems if you go to that Google that I gave you. Then even though the host says, well, we know that Al-Qaeda terrorists did 9/11, so what's your problem with it? But you know, you have to put up with that. But the CNN is not a bad place to start. As I said, 9/11 museum, CNN, faith leaders. That's not a bad place to start.
Great. Thanks. Any other questions or comments on either of these issues? Well, okay. Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention, Barry. Those are both obviously very relevant and important issues for our concern. Does anybody have any announcements this month? Any special announcements of any sort?
Craig?
Craig, yeah, go ahead.
I could just mention quickly a couple of things that have been going on up here. One is that, which I've written about on my own blog, one of them is that with the support of AD 9/11 Truth, there's an effort underway to form a federal political party that is based on a 9/11 Truth platform. And I've been part of those discussions. Basically, Richard Gage, when he went did his recent Cross Canada tour, he asked at every stop, he asked if anybody in the audience would be willing to consider putting their name forward as a candidate in the 2015 federal election. And so I actually put my hand up in Montreal when he asked that. And basically, we've been having weekly conference calls to discuss it and to discuss whether a party is the best move or whether sort of support for individual independent candidates is the best thing. And so it's kind of interesting because obviously you're dealing with people from various political stripes. We have people that are libertarians. We have people that support the Green Party, that are on the socialist side of things. You've got quite a range, so it's quite a challenge to try to figure out how to form a single political party to run. And I think the idea, I think everybody agrees, is that the primary idea is to get some attention and to raise some awareness, not necessarily to win, because I think the chances of winning would be extremely slim. So anyway, I just thought that might be worth mentioning that's going on. I mean, forming a party, I think, is a lot of paperwork and stuff involved, and it's not an easy thing, but I have a sense that it's easier to do in Canada than it is in the U.S., but I couldn't even really say that for sure, but that's kind of my sense. And the other thing is, another thing I've written about, too, is just that I personally have filed a couple of broadcasting complaints against a broadcaster up here in Canada who really went after Richard Gage in a really kind of sickening kind. A couple of reports he did on his television show, which is a network that goes all the way across the country, called Sun News, and basically I'm hopeful that they'll at least get wrapped on the knuckles and have to read the decision on the air, which is what happens if I win my complaint. Again, another sort of effort to, I guess, just to bring some attention to the issue and to let people know that they're not going to get away with stuff like that without at least somebody wanting to fight them anyway. That's my reason for doing it. So,
to whom do you complain to get
Yeah, there's an association of for private broadcasters, which, in other words, as opposed to the government-owned network, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, but all the private broadcasters, or most of them, are members of something called the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council, and they have several different codes of ethics that they use, and these are codes that are actually written by the private broadcasters themselves. So it's not imposed. It's not a complaint, it's made to a government agency about a private broadcaster. It's actually made to the association that these private broadcasters are a member of. So that they have the ability to basically, if they find that they have broken one of these codes, then they force them to read the fact that they've been found a violation in the program that is the offending program, and also one other time in prime time. And then this gets included in the precedents that other people complaining can then use to push other complaints forward.
So it's the equivalent of protection, in other words, right?
The equivalent of what, sorry?
The equivalent of a retraction.
Well, it's not a retraction in the sense that they don't have to say, we're sorry, we were wrong. In fact, they can be quite aggressive in saying, we're objecting to having to read this, because I've watched a couple of examples of that. So they don't have to admit anything, but they have to read the decision that says, we were found to be in violation of, et cetera, et cetera. So they have to read that, and everybody knows it, but they don't have to say, yeah, we're sorry.
I see. Well, that's fascinating. Very different from the American system, to be sure. Much more advanced. At least they're accountable in some way to some standards.
Yeah. So we'll see if it works.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. Any comments or questions on it?
Well, Barry here. I just am very admiring of what Craig has done. He just moved in on this in a really competent way, and elicited, because if you read his Truth and Shadows blog, you'll see how fascinating the story is when he got into a Twitter back and forth with this offensive guy whose name is Michael Corrin, and he's been offensive for a long time. And then Michael Corrin said many other incendiary things, a lot of name calling, a lot of claiming that all truthers are anti-Semites, and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
and so it's good that he is, Michael Corrin is so extreme, and Craig is in a just universe would be enabling Michael Corrin to hang himself, but he is hanging himself, I think, in the eyes of all reasonable people. And
yeah,
so it's a really worthwhile initiative that Craig has taken.
Is Mr. Corrin Jewish?
No, he's Anglican. Church of England.
I think his father was Jewish, though. So
is that right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He's a supercilious Brit. A supercilious Brit.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe a switch. Huh?
I shouldn't be name calling myself.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on that, or any other announcements? Well, let's see what time we got here. It's going on the hour. Does anybody have anything else that he or she would like to discuss? No other topics for discussion tonight? Well then, thank you tonight, and for putting together another monthly 9/11 teleconference, and we will be back on the last Wednesday of May, same time, same place, so tell all your friends, and we'll see you next time. Thank you tonight.
Very good.
Thanks,
thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.